In general, the record is good. Despite the fact that there remain deep mysteries and dark secrets of things which don't work out and things which we don't understand and probably never will.
What draws archaeologists from all over the world to this ancient landscape?
I was enthralled with the notion that the Bible was not just some sort of mystical document that had appeared out of nowhere, but that it was rooted in soil, in rocks, in the ground of antiquity, and that it involved real people.
Hello, 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 and welcome to the Bible Gumshoe, the podcast dedicated to investigating tough questions about the Bible and its origins. I'm Nicholas LeMay, your host and resident Bible detective. So I'm really thrilled to have you with us today. It's my hope that these podcasts will enrich your thinking and reading of the Bible. And as I mentioned on the last show, this month, September, is the month of the Bible. I wanted to dedicate this month's shows to questions about the Bible's nature and its origins. So today we're going to be asking a question. What is the Bible? Simple, right? I mean, doesn't everybody know what the Bible is? Well, maybe not. And maybe by the end of this show, you might be seeing the Bible in a way that you've never seen it before. Well, the Bible is a very unique book. In fact, it's not even a book at all. It's a collection of books. It's like a little library of different books written and put together in one set, in one volume, over the course of 2,000 years. Now, you should know that the Protestants and the Catholics have a different number of books in their Bibles. In the Roman Catholic Bible, there are 73 books, and in the Protestant Bible, there are 66. The differences have to do with a disagreement over the canon of the Old Testament. The Protestants accept 39 books, and the Catholics accept 46 books in the Old Testament. The word canon means a standard collection of books accepted as authoritative. So, we'll ask the question about why the Catholics and Protestants disagree with one another about how many books belong in the Old Testament in another episode. But the disagreement between these two historic traditions is only about the books of the Old Testament. With respect to the New Testament, both Catholics and Protestants all agree that the New Testament has 27 books. The Bible is also unique in that during the 2,000-year period in which it was being written and compiled, it was written in three different languages, Hebrew, Aramaic, and Greek, and on three different continents, Europe, Asia, and Africa. And if you're asking who the author of the Bible was, well, there were at least 40 different authors. Okay, but besides this unique history of its composition and compilation, isn't the Bible just like any other holy text? Doesn't it have basically the same teaching and message as every other book, Book of Mormon, the Quran, the Bhagavad Gita, etc., with just different details, different ways of knowing God, different takes or angles on it? Well, not exactly. The Bible is actually a very unique book among all other religious texts in the world, in a number of very important ways, and not just that its message sets the Bible apart from all other religious books in the world. And that is that the Bible is historically situated. No other holy book in the world, or of any of the world religions, situates itself in time and history like the Bible does. This is perhaps one of the most important features of the Bible, and it's the one thing that allows us as students of the Bible and investigators to apply the principles of historical and archaeological investigation to the Bible and what it says. But can't we do that with the other books? I mean, what about the Book of Mormon or the Quran? Interestingly, the teaching of Islam is that Muhammad received the Quran by direct divine revelation over a period of 23 years during the 7th century AD. When one reads the Quran, we find that it is a book full of spiritual teachings about Allah, but none of its content, none of the content of its 114 surahs is rooted in history or historical events. It contains spiritual guidance, spiritual teaching, but nothing historical or time-bound. And while the Quran does refer to more than 50 different historical or biblical figures or stories, what it does is focus on the spiritual significance of these stories for Islam. But it doesn't tell the narrative situated within a historical context like the Bible does. This is very different than the Bible, whose stories are always placed in concrete historical situations. Let me give you an example. The evangelist in the Gospel of Luke writes, "In those days a decree went out from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be registered. This was the first registration when Quirinius was governor of Syria." Luke doesn't tell us about the birth of some great savior fallen from heaven in a non-contextual way. He talks about the coming of a great savior into human time and history. He tells about Caesar Augustus and a historical census in Rome, and he places the circumstances of the census in the context of a Syrian governor named Quirinius. You see, Luke places the birth of Jesus within historically investigatable and verifiable, and that also means falsifiable, circumstances. No other holy text in history or on earth does this. The birth of Jesus isn't just a great spiritual truth, it's a historical event. The Christian faith doesn't just depend upon spiritual truths, but on spiritual truths rooted and based on historical events. What does this mean for what the Bible is? This means that unlike any other holy text of all the great religions of the world which purport to give spiritual guidance and enlightenment to mankind, the Bible's story and message is entirely dependent, not upon lofty spiritual truths, but rather on real historical and time-bound events. In theory, we can truly investigate the Bible, its stories, and most importantly, its message. And we could falsify them if we were to find out that they weren't true. You simply can't falsify, historically, a spiritual truth. But when those spiritual truths are bound to historical events, their truthfulness or their falsehood depends on the truthfulness of the narrative. This is what makes the Bible so unique. It's a book that has exposed itself to historical study and investigation. It's placed itself in real historical moments in our human history. This is, in fact, the message of the Bible, that God became man and entered into human history to save fallen humanity. Now, whatever anyone might think about that message, he can at least go and investigate the book that proclaims it. You can't do that with the Quran. You can't do that with the Book of Mormon. You can't do that with other holy books or any other text at all of all the holy religions on earth. Now, the 20th century scholar John Gresham Machen wrote this about the Bible. He said, "The way was opened, according to the Bible, by an act of God, when almost 1900 years ago, outside the walls of Jerusalem, the Eternal Son was offered as a sacrifice for the sins of men." Now, to my listener, parenthesis, that's history. That's history. And he goes on. "To that one great event, the whole Old Testament looks forward, and in that one event, the whole New Testament finds its center and core. Salvation, then, according to the Bible, is not something that was discovered, but something that happened. Hence appears the uniqueness of the Bible. All the ideas of Christianity might be discovered in some other religion. Yet there would be in that other religion no Christianity. For Christianity depends not upon a complex of ideas, but upon the narration of an event. Without that event, the world, in the Christian view, is altogether dark, and humanity is lost under the guilt of sin. There can be no salvation by the discovery of eternal truth, for eternal truth brings naught but despair because of sin. But a new face has been put upon life by the blessed thing that God did when he offered up his only begotten Son." Machen says in another place that the Bible presents history, and that the interpretation, the meaning of that history, is what we call doctrine, teaching. So that Christian teaching and Christian doctrine actually go hand in hand. And that's what the Bible is. It is the narration of events, together with the explanation of those events. So what is the Bible? Well, it's an anthology of books, written and compiled over 2,000 years in three different languages on three different continents and by over 40 different authors, all witnessing to one overarching story about creation, fall, redemption, and the promise of a recreation. And all of this grand narrative is purposefully and inexorably bound to human history and subject to serious historical, archaeological, and textual investigation. This is what makes it so unique and so fascinating to study over and over and over again. You'll never find another book like it if you search the whole world over. Well, thanks for joining us for this episode of the Bible Gumshoe. I hope you enjoyed our discussion of what is the Bible. In the next episode, join us to ask about an ancient translation without which the New Testament could never have existed, as we explore the history and origins of the Bible during the month of the Bible, September 2017. And if you have a question of your own, please send it to questions@BibleGumshoe.com. That's questions@BibleGumshoe.com. Or you can visit our website at www.BibleGumshoe.com. And don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. And please, if you like the show, rate it and leave a comment. This really helps us out. So until next time, this is Nicholas LeMay, your resident Bible detective, signing off.
Blah, blah, blah.